Hello and welcome into the Rebel Room. I am Taylor Byrne alongside Ray Brewer in our new digs. That's right, we moved across the street, new Sun offices, and now a new podcast studio in the, what are we calling this? The corner of a basement, basically? Feels that way.
It has that basement-y feel, which excited me because I grew up without basements in my life.
Aren't really a thing.
Yeah, you had a lot of major life achievements in a basement, I'm sure.
I wish. Yeah. It usually didn't turn out that way, but that's the goal, I suppose. And we are here in what is mostly the off-season for the two main UNLV sports, but it is anything but dull lately for UNLV basketball. A lot of coming in, going out, and we'll start off with that. Steven Zimmerman is the big one after a four-year recruiting adventure. UNLV was the first program to offer him a scholarship before he had ever played a varsity game, stuck through it till the end up beating out Kansas, Kentucky, Arizona, UCLA. Brewer, you knew it the whole way, right? No doubt in your mind.
I sensed it. I do recall a few, maybe months ago or years ago, I'd mentioned Zimmerman to UNLV, and you were like, keep dreaming.
Yeah.
That was your catch.
My answer for a very long time was, no, he's going elsewhere. And then about, you know, we could actually go back because it was on one of these episodes of the Rebel Room where I was like, okay, there's enough going the other way that I was comfortable at that time. It was probably January something going with UNLV there, and everything indicated it would stay that way. Obviously, that could have changed if Dave Rice would have been fired. That could have changed if Ryan Miller left for New Mexico, which was something that was discussed as they were looking for an associate head coach there. But he ends up staying. Zimmerman comes. Huge deal, big deal, good deal. I know no one's going to think getting a top 10 recruit is a bad thing, certainly. So where do you on the sort of the spectrum rank getting him, which, you know, makes it look like UNLV likely going to have a top 10 recruiting class for back-to-back years and three out of the last four?
I mean, to me, it's a huge deal, without a doubt. I mean, one, not only was it a top 10 player that UNLV had been on since Dave Rice got the job, it was a top 10 player who plays in an elite high school in UNLV's backyard.
Dave Rice's younger brother.
Younger brother. And you have to keep those players home. Four years ago, Gorman had three top 50 kids, Carter, Allen, Muhammad. All of them went to the Pac-12. UNLV got Demetrius Morant. We all saw how that worked out. Now, 4 years later, somebody has enough confidence in UNLV, despite not making the tournament the past 2 years, to stay at home and be that hometown hero. So for me, it's just significant that Dave Rice's vision to where he sees the program, he's still able to get people to believe in that despite the results on the court.
And Zimmerman coming in, I don't know about, like, huge thing, because I just guess I've seen enough freshmen have good to middling seasons. You have a couple of breakouts. But, I mean, it's tough to make that transition. And when he's, potentially a one-year college player, I still think that there's certainly the possibility, at least, that he could play 2 years at UNLV. But you're not figuring you're getting him for 4 years, certainly. Impossible that you just get him for one. And so it just creates an urgency to be able to put things together that, you know, UNLV has shown that they struggle with definitely, you know, last year, 2 years ago. So it's reason for optimism, but you also got to be, you know, realistic about it and what that lineup is going to look like. And part of that, for I guess it was, you know, close to a week where you had the idea, well, you know, Zimmerman's in, will Chris Wood be playing along with him? And for the longest time, I never thought that there was any possibility that those two would play together. And yet Chris, as he was going about the NBA draft decision-making process, dropping a lot of hints on Twitter, even the day before. So on Tuesday, sends out, looks good, what y'all think of a, you know, Photoshopped poster with him, Zimmerman, Ben Carter, and Good Luck Okonobo all in UNLV jerseys. That would be, you know, the presumptive front court, kind of the main pieces there. So, of course, he's staying, right?
That's what I felt.
He sends
initially,
that on Tuesday. There's a report Wednesday afternoon from a guy who works for Real GM who I had never heard of him before, but anyone who had said they had a very good track record with these things, saying that Chris Wood was staying. I mean, I said since before last season that he was leaving, but there was enough evidence, you know, circumstantial, obviously, that even I bought into it. It's like, he's not really going to turn now, is he? And then he makes the ultimate heel turn. It was great theater.
Do you think he ever was going to stay, or do you just think produce one of those YouTube videos, which he did to say he was leaving, A, you don't do it yourself, and B, it doesn't happen overnight.
Yeah, Donnie Seals was working on that because it was sent out. It was under the season account, which is the, you know, kind of documentary, whatever, the videos that they do every once in a while for Finley Prep. And so that's kind of who made it. And it's possible that they were making this little video thing for an announcement either way. And then, because it was just an interview, like sitting in Mendenhall, where he says, I'm leaving. And so it's, you know, could have had two alternates to that. I think probably not. It was made that he was leaving, that he was always leaving. But maybe, you know, how sincere he was about staying, I don't know. But look, he loved the theatrics of it all. He loved the circus of people hanging on his every word. And I've heard from multiple people that he directly told some that he's coming back. And so I don't even think the report that came out Wednesday afternoon was necessarily completely wrong. I think it very good chance it was sourced well, and it was just purposeful bad information, which is there's a lot of different ways to take
it happens
to take how Chris Wood handled this. Like, mature is certainly not among them. As someone who was just sitting on the sidelines of this and through most of it felt like he was always trolling and always messing with fans, when he sent out that ooh, I hear Chris Wood is 70-30 towards coming back, you know, the tweet at Zim's mom after all of sort of a back and forth one night, and then he deleted it right away. He got our friend Adam Hill to write a little story about it. Which I think was the intention the entire time. He just wanted to see who he could draw in at various points. And if you want to say that's completely wrong for the kid to do, you can say that. But at the same time, I mean, I think it just sort of... Look, I'm not going to defend it entirely, but it also points out what a ridiculous circus this entire thing is, and 50-year-olds being really upset over the comings and goings and decisions of 19 and 20-year-olds. I think that maybe is a time to reevaluate your life and how much priority you're putting into a basketball team. And also,
unless it's Tim Tebow coming back for a fourth year to Florida,
the same thing. And also just how awful a lot of fans were to Chris this season. So I don't necessarily begrudge him, you know, what he possibly sees as some vengeance. I don't know. What's your take on the whole thing? Just how he handled it. Obvious hints that he was coming back, and, you know, all indications are that he may have been considering it at least a bit, but, you know, maybe not at all.
Yeah, you know, it's a real big decision, and I know Chris is real eager to please. And I could see where, you know, he's talking to a teammate and he tells the teammate that, yeah, he's coming back. And I think he had that back and forth, not knowing what to do. But the truth of the matter is, you know, he's a professional now and he should have people advising him on how to act professionally. And what he did in terms of, you know, kind of stringing people along, I think probably didn't show the best professionalism. And, you know, I bet that in 5 or 6 years when we interview him and he's, you know, bouncing around the league, wherever he may be, he's probably going to express some regret for that.
I think that's possible.
Yeah. And UNLV, let's be honest, they lose Chris Wood, they gain Steven Zimmerman. They're very similar players, similar size, similar.
Would you rather have junior year Chris Wood or freshman year Steven Zimmerman?
Well,
if you can only pick one.
That's a great question. I would rather have junior year Chris Wood just because he's experienced, and no matter how good Zimmerman is or will be, it's going to take some time to get used to the college game and the speed of it, whereas, you know, he dominated high school for 4 years. But they do a lot of the same things. They're both tall and long. They both could play inside and out. They both shoot the ball probably a little too much from the outside. Steven's a better passer. He hustles a little harder. But Chris is a lot more experienced. And you saw at times he just dominate the league last year.
Yeah.
I mean, absolutely would take people off the dribble, dunk, step back, make a shot, block a shot. But it was just inconsistent.
I mean, inconsistent, except that he averaged a double-double for the season. And, I mean, rebounding was never really an issue for him. Even those games where he clearly just looked like he was not mentally in it, he still produced. And that's the thing that I think, above all, you have to say about him, as much as, you know, and I've done plenty of it too. You want to be like the body language doctor, and, you know, I've judged this from viewing and have had it backed up by people within the program that he's just a very moody kid. He is a kid. You know, you can't expect complete professionalism, I guess, out of college players. But in the games, no matter what you want to say about him, you got to say he produced. And the ability was there. I mean, he's projected in most things I've seen as kind of a late first-round pick. And so for his sake, certainly you're hoping that he does go in the first round, gets a guaranteed contract, kind of sets himself up. So even if there is some ups and downs, that he's at least, you know, got that guaranteed money, because he is a project at the next level. You know, if he does go in the first round and as high as he goes, it's whatever team takes him is most likely going to do that with the understanding that he's, you know, he's a project guy for a few years down the road. We hope he can fulfill his potential, live up to the ability that's clearly there from it, you know, from his body, from his athleticism.
And that's why being a late round pick, a late first round pick, he'd be able to get on a team that might not need him to contribute immediately, that have a chance to develop him camp, send him down to the D League for a while, you know, and get his talent up to speed. He's a kid. Remember when he was at Finley, I think he committed the summer before his junior year.
Yep.
He was like 165 pounds. And while he's up to the 220s, 225s now.
Maybe.
He's going to get pushed around by those are grown men that are physically stout.
You know, and that's actually the jump he's going to have to make to the NBA as far as playing against guys like that. It's bigger, but it is comparative to Steven Zimmerman coming into college where, I mean, just for one example, take David Collette, you know, guy who's going to be a sophomore for Utah State and a man because he did, you know, serve the 2-year mission and then redshirted for a year. You don't play kids like that. No matter how good your schedule is at Bishop Gorman, usually you're only playing teams that have like one or two kind of D1 type of players. And so
who are just 17 years old.
Yeah. And especially with the schedule that they're playing, you know, he knows Carlton Bragg at Kansas, but they've also got other people, you know, a Perry Ellis type of guy. You've got Arizona and Arizona State on the schedule. He's going to get pushed around quite a bit. And so I think both of those guys at their next step are going to face, you know, similar challenges in that regard. Obviously, I think going from the Mountain West to the NBA is completely, you know, an entire level jump different than going from elite high school to the college play. But that's a transition that's going to be difficult for either of them. But with Chris Wood leaving, Rashad Vaughn leaving, both of those guys putting their names into the NBA draft, projected for Wood, late first round, projected for Vaughn, second round. So I guess best case scenario for both of them is that they get drafted. Wood gets drafted in the first round. And then you have Dantley Walker transferred, Kendall Smith transferred, and the two seniors. So Zimmerman, Jalen Poyser, Derek Jones in, three more spots available. They had transfer guards Ike Nwamu from Mercer and Nigel Williams-Goss from Washington, obviously was a 4-year Finley prep player. They were in last weekend. Things seemed to go very well for both. I would not be shocked to see both of them commit to UNLV, not predicting that yet. I'm still trying to gather more information on it, but everything I've heard, kind of early indications, and like I said, we're recording this on Friday, April 24th. Those guys were in last weekend. Could be decisions made as early as next week or over the weekend. But I feel like UNLV is in very good standing there. And then you've got potentially filling another one, Justin Jackson, We've mentioned before, but the class of 2016 Ford at Findlay Prep could still reclassify to 2015. And so if all of those things filled out, then you would have, you know, the full six scholarships used, with Nuamu stepping into a potential starting shooting guard spot, or at least competing for that, Jackson filling out some of the front court depth, and I don't know, potentially redshirting. I don't know. That kind of depends on how things shake out and what you see once you get everybody in there. But then Nigel Williams-Goss would most likely then have to sit out a year. And I think if you're the way you would want to make the roster work, you would prefer him to sit out then too, and then have 2 years after Jerome Segears and Nuamu are gone.
To think of a backcourt in 2 years of Pat McCaw and Nigel Williams-Goss, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
I mean, Nigel Williams-Goss, I have a high opinion of. I know there's some people out there who think he might be a little bit of a selfish player.
Well, yeah, that was kind of the reports coming out of Washington, actually, is that the players did not like playing with him, that he was, you know, all about me type of stuff, which, you know, like you said, it is not in line with what we've seen, heard mostly about Nigel up to that point, but I've, you know, maybe it's true. I can't refute it.
He did lead the pack with 10 or 12 in assists, right?
Yes.
Tough to be selfish.
And he averaged 15 points, I think, his sophomore year. Yeah, he's had a couple really nice seasons for Washington.
He's everything Dave Rice envisioned Cody Doolin to be, but he's athletic.
Sure. Well, I don't think they're similar players, but
no. But in terms of what Dave Rice hoped Cody Doolin would do,
yeah, I mean, Cody Doolin was billed as pass first, pass second, pass third, pass fourth. A guy who averages 15 points per game is not that.
Yeah,
I don't think they're completely different.
Okay, they're different
to me.
Okay,
and so, you know, that potentially sets things up for the next couple of years if they can, you know, kind of get those guys in for those last three. But they have some options with the guys that they already have. Poyser, Jones, and Zimmerman, good class, contribute right away. Zimmerman, it'll be very intriguing to see kind of how he slots in, how he develops throughout, like I said, what figures to be a difficult schedule, a tough year for UNLV, and a gotta win year for UNLV.
So your starting five is Goodluck, Zimmerman, Segears, McCaw, Dwayne?
Yeah, I suppose you either go Dwayne or Derek Jones, kind of whoever slots in there. And I would put McCaw starter, and I'm guessing that's how it would end up. It's just it's intriguing to me how they're going to use some of these guys, because you have, you know, Segears, who shot above 40% his last year at Rutgers from the three, and he's running the point, but so then, you know, offers that he can also shoot. But as well, Pat McCaw did well running the point his freshman year, but also can be a shooter, stepped up into that scoring role when Rashad Vaughn got injured. So do you want to start him off as that? Do you ever – and I guess the theory would be, if you just have multiple ball handlers, multiple guys who can score at any time, then you just have threats all over the court, can't focus in. But if you don't have sort of that leader too, that's something that they've kind of clearly missed, like just someone who – all right, 20 seconds on the shot clock. We haven't done anything yet. I'm going to start us into something. I'm going to create.
The backcourt could swing kind of like Belfield and Marshall did.
Yeah, except Belfield was more clearly like the
but
the
they could have been
point guard.
They could have been interchangeable.
Yeah.
They were supposed to be. That was the plan. It was. I promise you.
I mean, Belfield was the point guard. Marshall was the shooting guard. Like, it was kind of – and Marshall could bring it up, and obviously he then played point guard his senior year. So, yeah, that could be a good comparison there. Shift gears to football. Wrapped up spring. Blake Decker.
My guy.
Head and shoulders.
Yeah.
Seems to be the starting quarterback.
I love Tony. I'm so happy he got the job, but I don't see what they're going to be able to do with Blake. I mean, Blake's a great guy, professional, poised, just got destroyed last year.
Yeah.
And because he was constantly getting hit, constantly on the run, constantly having to put plays back together, he made some really, really, really bad throws. And I go back to the one game UNLV won the Northern Colorado game.
Come on now. They won two games.
Well, okay. They won two games. Go back to the game UNLV won.
Yeah.
Northern Colorado game. He had one of the worst, I hate to use this word, boneheaded mistakes a quarterback can make. And I just, the other options must just be so bad, or this guy must have just been gotten that much better to go with him. My humble opinion.
Yeah. The other options do not look very good right now, so that's part of it. Kevin Thompson, third string, was a kid who redshirted last year, and then Kurt Palandek is the transfer from Laney College, coming in. I believe he's a junior.
Sophomore, actually.
Sophomore, yeah. Okay. And so that's, you know, you figured when Tony Sanchez, new coach, brings in a quarterback, especially when you had a guy in Blake Decker who was the second leading intercepted quarterback in Division I last season, that you would lean towards that new guy, but so far that hasn't played out. And everything I've been at, Decker has been the better quarterback. It's obviously tough to gauge too much of these things when you're going against UNLV's defense, but that's, you know, that's all they can do in spring is go against what they've got. So he clearly looks like the guy right now. We'll see how that develops through the summer. But a summer where UNLV football, at least expected to be, not completely dormant like they normally are. I've already seen some kids tweet about getting their offers. UNLV, you know, trying to just put itself in the mix more, which I know is something you have wanted to see for a long time now.
Yeah, I was clamoring for an earlier start in the recruiting process for UNLV. Bobby Houck really prides himself in being this keen evaluator, going after, you know, a few kids that could impact right away, but more focusing on the Tim Cornettes or Devontae Davises, who were kind of under the radar but had that special skill set he felt he could develop. Tony Sanchez is like, I'm going to offer everybody, and I don't care how many stars is next to your name or who else has offered you. I'm going to offer you. You're going to take a trip to me. You're going to love what I have to say, and I'm going to sell you on being a Rebel. And a lot of kids are fired up about UNLV football and what Tony's doing. And we'll see what that equates to on signing day 2016 and 2017, because he's got a ton of offers out already to the current sophomore high school class. And it's a different approach. It's more common to what you see at like a Boise State, kind of the benchmark of the Mountain West, Taylor. But it's also how Reno goes about it. Reno's already got 8 or 9 kids committed.
And this is the two offensive linemen, as our new table starts to shift dramatically in our podcast studio, the two kids that he already has committed, you know, from Gorman, that's the earliest that anyone has committed to UNLV, dating back to at least 2004, which is as far back as the Rivals archives go for just having the committed date along with the players. So clearly trying to be more proactive, trying to treat UNLV really like any of the big programs as far as how they go about branding themselves and just going into anyone's room trying to sell it, knowing that there's a lot of them that they're just not going to get, and I guess, you know, just kind of being okay with that.
Doesn't hurt to ask, you know, the pretty girl sitting in the corner of the cafeteria, go up and say hi.
You hang out in a lot of cafeterias lately?
No, you know, it's an example, like back to the middle school dance, right?
Yeah,
the boys are on one side, the girls are in the other. The first guy that goes and asks, he's a winner.
All right. So, and we haven't talked a whole lot since the end of UNLV's basketball season, just to end on this note. What, in your mind, does Dave Rice have to do in the 2015-16 season, where he's going to have another solid recruiting class, depending on, you know, it's already good, and it just kind of depends on who else they use those three scholarships on. Have a lot of returners, obviously missing your two leading scorers in Chris Wood and Rashad Vaughn, but you've got pieces like Pat McCaw, Good Luck Okonobo, you know, Dwayne Morgan, Jordan Cornish, getting Daquan Cook off of his red shirt from the ACL tear. You've got Ben Carter, Jerome Seegears coming off of their red shirts. What does Dave Rice have to do to keep his job?
Top two or three finish in the Mountain West, make the NCAAs.
You think he has to win a game there?
No. I mean, the winning a game in the tournament is impossible. I mean, you see it every year. Duke loses one year. I mean, anything could happen in a tournament game. It's not the best team that day. It's whoever plays the best. And I think as long as he gets there, especially if he's got, you know, McCod would stay another year, Morgan likely would stay another year, and you add Nigel Goss to the mix, if he's around, now I think you got something special.
Yeah. I would really like to know, and this is something that so far has been avoided by the interested parties, I'd like to know, like, what exact parameters were set for this upcoming season. Because I've said it before, if you're going to do the fair thing as far as his contract is concerned, you had to give Dave Rice at least another season, but college athletics period don't necessarily have to be fair. But they did give him at least one more year. But I would like to know what exactly was laid down for the requirements. I don't think winning an NCAA tournament game should be in there, because like you, I think that it's just it can be such a crapshoot. But at the same time, if you're trying to build and trying to move forward, eventually that has to be part of it. And so I wouldn't be surprised if that was set about for. To me, it's compete for the Mountain West regular season title. I think conference championships are much more indicative of, you know, who you are as a team, as a coaching staff, as a program, like being able to build and win consistently against your similar foes. And that's something that UNLV did not do at all last year and finished third in each of Dave Rice's first three seasons. So we'll see. A lot to be interested about, if you want to be excited, a lot to be excited about. But as always, just kind of with what we've seen, there's going to be some pessimism, and I think it's fair too to sort of wait until they prove it at once you actually get into it and actually put these pieces together once more in what figures to be a very talented, a word I don't use very often. I think off season we can say talent a little bit. I'll allow it every once in a while, but once we get into the season, it's about what you're doing, not what the rankings say. For Ray, I am Taylor in our new offices. Hopefully this table doesn't break before our next episode of the Rebel Room, which we have no idea when it will be, but I will be sure to let you guys know. Thanks for listening.